Hello again, and welcome back, everyone. Ecosystemic Futures is the Shoshenworks Foresight Series with NASA Heritage. In safety-critical aerospace environments, knowledge isn't merely an asset. Its infrastructure is vital as radar systems and navigation networks. Today, we're exploring how air traffic navigation services are solving one of aerospace's most important challenges: safeguarding mission-critical expertise before it walks out the door with retiring professionals. I'm Diane Finkhausen, CEO of Shoshenworks, and Dr. Rafilo Mabasso, Head of Information and Knowledge Management at Air Traffic and Navigation Services, SOC, and Wisdom Nache, Knowledge and Content Management Specialist at ATNS, join me. Dr. Mabasso holds a PhD in information science and leads a comprehensive knowledge strategy in high-stakes aviation environments. Wisdom brings expertise in transformative KM frameworks with quantifiable results and knowledge utilization and organizational resilience. Together, they're building systems that capture decades of expertise from retiring industry legends while creating knowledge infrastructure that modern aerospace operations demand. Let's explore how knowledge becomes operational capability. Dr. Mabasso and Wisdom, please share a little bit more about your background and your work with our listeners. It's just fascinating work, and so it really transcends industries and domains, and I think a lot of our listeners will appreciate your work.
Thank you very much for having us here, Diana. We are very excited. We've all wanted to share our experience and actually share the work that we're doing. My background, I come from the background of being a librarian, got interested into knowledge management, and then I went into back to, I'm a lifelong learner. So I went back to schools, learned more about knowledge management. And I was quite fortunate in the process. I also got jobs around knowledge management. So I have been in the knowledge management space for more than 20 years. I've worked for big corporates. I've worked for NGOs. I work for academic space as a lecturer, a part-time lecturer in knowledge management. And with ATNS, which is Air Traffic Navigation Services, I'm nearly 11 years with the organization. And knowledge management has been the areas that I've been responsible for. So yes, I've been around the block.
We're thrilled to have you. Thrilled to have you. And Wisdom, you have a similarly fascinating career and focus area. Maybe walk our listeners through a little bit of your background as well.
Thank you so much, Dan. I always throw a little joke around the DIKW pyramid and just been Wisdom quite fit in. Yeah, so my background experience is sort of similar to Dr. Mabasso's. I started in the library space and grew to fall in love with metadata. In fact, I took on a role of a metadata specialist in the past, and likewise got into information management. Luckily, I also did some work around ICT business alignment. I think when I landed in knowledge management, also through the inspiration and mentorship of Dr. Mabasso as well, I was then able to couple all of that and really marry the technological side of things with very conventional knowledge management practices to bring about coherent view and standpoint in terms of knowledge management. I've been with ATNS for 2 years now, and it's been quite a bliss, quite value-adding work that we do in the industry, I must say. Thank you, Dan, and thank you so much for having me.
We're thrilled to have you and really looking forward to this conversation. We'll dive into the importance of knowledge management and safety critical systems. I can only imagine and certainly can observe the fascinating evolution that knowledge management is really undertaking as we speak with the digital era, right? The pace of change, right? The pace of obsolescence, right? Information and knowledge are so critical and in this fast moving environment, but how you unlearn and learn and retain and distribute relevant information across very dynamic and complex and interconnected systems is is fascinating, and for us, for our listeners, and really what has brought us here together today. So coming back to the safety critical systems and really the knowledge crisis in safety critical systems. So you mentioned it, ATNS operates where outdated information can easily and directly compromise flight safety. Paint the picture for our aerospace audience. What happens when a 30-year veteran, air traffic controller, or navigation systems engineer walks out the door for the last time? What knowledge walks out with them that can't be found in any manual?
Thank you so much for such a critical question that actually keeps us up at night. And it has been a reality within TNS, whereby as an organization, we're losing a lot of air traffic controllers. And some of them, not because they are retiring, because they've been poached out there by a similar organization in the world. So we really have to be on our toes to make sure that we secure as much as we can. And with knowledge, it's always been seen as a voluntary thing. However, we've been very fortunate within ATNS. We haven't made it a voluntary thing. It is a policy-driven process whereby we are expected to make sure that as a knowledge management team, we harvest as much as we can, we safeguard as much as we can, we secure as much as we can in terms of knowledge management. And broadly speaking, we are using a number of knowledge management capabilities. One of them is knowledge management and the content management. I'm sure Wisdom will elaborate further because that's his area of specialization. We've got the library, which is basically what we call the virtual and digital library, where we're ensuring that the very critical information is available timely, real time. And also we've got the youth management. As a state-owned organization, we are highly, highly, highly regulated from the point of our national regulation and international regulations. I'm sure you know about that. So then we now have a capability through a function, which is called records management function, that also reports within information and knowledge management. So through the three areas that I've mentioned, we're making sure that we provide different services, but all converging into saying we have information and knowledge management data, and making sure that our information is not just, we've mentioned that knowledge and information within ATNS is not just an asset, it's an infrastructure. That is a real truth. You've defined it in such a way that it is exactly what it is. It is an infrastructure because it is used, it is needed, and we lose it, as you've mentioned. So our role within IKM, we then have to put these capabilities and ensure be proactive. We are more proactive than reactive. Yes, at there are points because we are not at all times at the same, the same places and so on. So some areas we find ourselves being reactive. We've got pocket of excellence where we've done so well. And obviously there are some challenges, and I'm sure we'll discuss those challenges later on. So for us, KM must be embedded directly, and it is, into our operational space and workflows. Because so most of our policies are informed, are structured in a way that they have a capability of knowledge management. Our corporate strategy has clear indication of how we should be actually enabling the organization in terms of knowledge management. Our policies, as I've already mentioned. So as IKM, we are not just an operational function within the organization. We are strategically positioned. We report on a regular basis, monthly basis, and our strategy is not only at ECO level, it also informs the board in terms of our knowledge harvesting, because it became very clear that we're losing a lot of knowledge, and that then became, we were elevated as knowledge management in the organization to make sure that we are provided with support, leadership, and ensuring that we provide the organization with the tools and the capabilities of harvesting the knowledge. So as I say that, it is embedded in a way that not in all areas we are expected to be available physical to make sure that knowledge is harvested. You'll hear as we continue in terms of how we actually make sure that knowledge is harvested, it's safeguarded, and still be available where it can be accessed without even any of us being aware. And we measure that through the dashboards that Wisdom will explain about later on, to see if our knowledge is used, the one that we've already harvested, and the one that has been harvested just through the systems and the workflows that we've defined and designed in the organization. So I'm sure Bhutom can add on this one because he's more close to the whole side of making sure that what I've just said is happening and obviously having to account to the business.
Thank you so much, Dr. Ref. And just an expansion of what Dr. Ref has said. And when I think about knowledge management in the context of ATNS, I think about it from a civil aviation perspective, driven from our safety management systems. And what that means is that in line with what Dr. Mabaso has said, we're not just an administrative function, but there's deep entrenchment and embedment of our knowledge management practices within our operational environment. What really that means for me is that our ecosystems, in as far as air traffic and navigation systems is concerned, requires continuously validated and context-aware knowledge flows. And I think it's really the knowledge management systems that Dr. Refilo has really touched on and the different initiatives that we'll highlight during the course of our conversation today. But all of that is building capabilities to ensure that the right knowledge and information reaches the right roles at the right time, and ultimately to protect lives. Our business is a safety business, to protect lives and also the integrity of our airspace. And so the positioning of our knowledge management agenda is really engineered as a risk control measure within our safety management system, and not just an administrative function as it would be conventionally defined across other industries and businesses. And so that's really just to expand on what Dr. Refilwe has said. Thank you, Tan.
So important and challenging in when you have churn, right, in your human systems, right? You need those digital systems and well-constructed digital systems for continuity and security. We've seen here in the States just a tremendous amount of change, or just even over the past year, in our air systems, our air control systems, and knowledge management is paramount, to your point, for safety, for security. I think it's fascinating too, and this is an issue that transcends also domains, but you've both built careers around what seems like an impossible challenge, or certainly an important challenge, capturing tacit knowledge from experts who often can't articulate what they know because it's become so instinctive, right? They're very tenured, seasoned professionals, highly specialized. They know what they know, they're A to B, and they make very rapid decisions based on that deep experience. How do you begin to extract and preserve expertise that operates below conscious awareness in many respects?
Okay. We, as an organization, as I've mentioned earlier on, that we are challenged with loss of knowledge. And currently, the focus is more on the retiring workforce. However, there are other areas that we are aware that we lose knowledge due to many other reasons that I've mentioned earlier on. So for us, knowledge loss is due to those. It's critical, it's important, it's painful, I must say, as an organization, because it affects the operations and critical sides of the organization in the air traffic navigation services or management, or also even in our technical services where we got our engineers having been to leave because of for many other reasons. So for us, we looked at this from the point of saying we need to embed the knowledge harvesting, knowledge retention in the operational, the standard operating procedures, because if we don't do that, then and waiting for knowledge management to come to say we're going to harvest knowledge, we're very thin in terms of capacity. It will not happen. So our role was then to say we need now to go back and understand and align the procedures, the standards, the policies within these environments. and make sure that knowledge management is part of those rules, because it doesn't have to come as a special occasion for knowledge management, but it must be natural and it must be part of what you do every day. And our role then comes as a level of compliance. It comes as a level of monitoring. It comes as a level of identifying areas of concern, and then we push for that, we focus on that. And more than anything, making sure that even for those who are just joining the organization, they understand our role. To an for a classical example, for all our induction, we work very closely with human capital, which is HR. HR will invite us to the induction program. They give us a slot where we actually talk about this. The knowledge management, the content management, and the other areas of what we do and how they are expected to participate. And then we keep on now making sure that we run brown bag sessions, what we call brown bag session. We make sure that we also embed knowledge management through being in their departmental meetings, making sure that we raise that awareness. And our role then making sure that we align the knowledge management capabilities with the policies, as I've mentioned, and also with the departmental strategies, because as much as we've got the organizational strategy, then we have to try to drill it down to the departmental strategy, where we are able to identify where are the concerns, the areas of that needs our focus. And I think that wisdom can add from the operational side of it in terms of how it goes about it.
Yeah. No, thank you so much, Dr. Fugue. And from a knowledge harvesting perspective, and I know at a very high level, Dr. Flair has really touched on it, that there is a program that we designed. And of course, the priority now is looking at the retiring workforce. And that is because there's been quite a knowledge drain, and not just in South Africa, but in the industry itself, in as far as knowledge loss is concerned. And really the design of the program is looking at knowledge loss risk assessment and the impact that it would have in the industry and ultimately civil aviation. And secondly, it's looking at who are the legends that carry significant knowledge that is quite pertinent to our organization, and really prioritizing it across three categories. So we've got the core, critical, and scarce. And then what we sort of designed as well, and I think Dr. Mabaso is really going to talk a little bit about that, is really looking at the metrics itself. So we look at the legends, we look at the beneficiaries, we look at the different domains and knowledge areas within which the organization is going to feel significant impact. We do understand, and I think like you've put it quite right, Diane, that the knowledge management processes are quite, while we do socialize the organization in terms of knowledge management practices, we do understand that sometimes it cannot be as understood as we understand it. And so we really try and simplify it. And so there is a number of initiatives within that, such as coaching and mentoring, over and above just best practice manuals that we've been able to, within which document technical knowledge. That has really even informed OJTI programs, Dr. Rifulo, on-the-job training initiatives within that space that translates into air traffic control capacity development, etc. I think also other areas, we've got an aviation training academy within the organization. And some of the knowledge that is embedded within our skilled workforce translates into course content that can be delivered even at the academy. So it's really very practical work that informs not just the harvesting of knowledge, but the workings of the knowledge that we harvest across different domains within the organization. And I think Dr. Mabaso is really going to touch on that also during the course of the conversation, but it's really to simplify it in a language that is understood. I also understand one of the biggest challenges that we've had. In fact, the coaching and mentoring or JTI on the job training comes from the understanding that we are also knowledge managers, and sometimes translating that knowledge is quite complex. And so how do we pair beneficiaries with the legends, and how do we ensure knowledge transfer even outside of knowledge that is sort of documented? that we would not be able to translate from a knowledge management perspective. So it's really some of those nitty-gritties that we do. Thanks, Diane.
Yeah, I love that framework, the legends and beneficiaries. How could you not feel good about your role in that system? And speaking of systems, we spend a lot of time understanding brilliant systems design and systems of systems. So I'd love to double click into that just a little bit if we could. So the knowledge crisis is really, it demands systematic solutions, right? And you've touched on this in some of your explanations, but let's maybe double click into that and examine the architecture that you have built to address this opportunity, this challenge. So your knowledge and content management initiative integrates multiple systems, subject matter expert locators, glossaries, FAQs, lessons learned, databases. So how do these components work together as a system rather than isolated tools? And what was your design philosophy as you were putting this basically ecosystemic model together?
Yeah. Please go ahead, Dr. And then I'll...
I'm actually smiling because this is so spot on, and you led on this process, and you were leading on the basis of that. The strategy was quite clear. It actually gave you the marching orders, and you executed in a way that we find ourselves very proud on what you've done. So you are the right person to talk through this.
No, thank you so much, Dr. Mabaso. And you're quite right. So you've really explained the different components of our content management system. And I think the very point of this departure that we made as knowledge management, firstly, we went on a deep stakeholder engagement. And deep stakeholder engagement really wanted to understand what are the challenges that exist in as far as knowledge and content management exists in the organization. And we didn't look at that, and you'll hear me, I keep on speaking about risk management. I've actually graduated in risk management as well. So we've looked at that from a risk perspective as well. What impact does it have in the organization from a risk perspective? And I think knowledge management in itself and the different initiatives that you've alluded to are sort of risk management controls. So they are risk controls based on the deep dive or stakeholder engagement that we've sort of had. And then what we then started doing is from a knowledge management perspective, we then started defining, and Dr. Mabaso speaks to them, she's got a nice name for it, toolkits, right? So it's a toolkit of knowledge management to sort of respond to these overarching issues and challenges. But I think one of the key phrases there in your question, Diane, is around the integration. One of the things that we really understood is, one, knowledge is integrated. And in our case, it informs integrative thinking. It informs integrative thinking. It informs decision making. If you look, for example, at the frequently asked questions and how we've sort of designed them, and we've mapped them against our subject matter expertise locator. So each question that we receive in that knowledge base is systematically based on the workflows that we've developed. It's mapped against a subject matter expert that exists within the organization. And then they are able to respond to that. It speaks to different processes. It speaks to different systems. It would speak to different processes and policies within the organization. We also use our subject matter experts to sort of validate the content that is curated within that space. And very often, we're quite big in terms of business intelligence, where we're able to see systematically what does the data tell us based on the level of impact that our different initiatives have. And there are different metrics that we sort of use to measure that. And that informs our organizations quite big on continuous improvement. And that really informs also continuous improvement as we look at the impact that our different initiatives have against the work of our subject matter expertise to sort of respond to that and the recommendations that also emanate from our lessons learned databases and dashboards, then we're able to then further improve based on the metrics and indicators that we've defined. And so that's basically speaking of the coherence and the integration of our different initiatives, but it all really starts from understanding the customer needs, which we engage at the level of stakeholder engagement. I'm not sure, Doc.
No, I'm quite happy that you've mentioned our stakeholder engagement. And just to add on what you've just mentioned with regards to stakeholder engagement, our stakeholder engagement was quite broad. We engage internally with the various department and identify their level of influence in terms of knowledge management, including your risk department, including your legal department, including communications. Then what was quite exciting was being able also to have engagement with the various executives to understand their knowledge needs and their influence again in terms of their juniors, because as much as they can have that kind of a buy-in, but it's not only about buy-in. And I think most of the time as KM professionals, we talk about buy-in, we need buy-in, we need buy-in. But we have experienced that buy-in is not all. It's buy-in and the level of influence to their own department employees. Because as much as they can buy in, but if they don't bring that influence, you are still going to hit the wall. You are still going to continue talking and talking and nothing happens. So as soon as we've got their buy-in, then we elevated the engagement of saying, what's going to be your involvement and how are we going to, and that led us to a level of even getting into a level of having the kind of SLAs with each of those departments to say, this is how we're going to serve you. This is how you're going to help us to be able to enable your environment to safeguard knowledge, to harvest knowledge, and then we give the reports. As Wisdom mentioned, our reports are basically data-driven because we measure the impact on our BI, Power BI reports. And we go back to them and say, these are your reports. This is how your department is performing. Are you happy? And obviously, no one will want to see a report which is sitting with zeros. And our reports are based on their needs, because report for Department A will not necessarily be the same with a report for Department B, because the report will be based on what the executive will have defined as a need and knowledge critical. Then we then have developed the reports based on that. So I just wanted to highlight the importance of our engagement and at what level. Thank you very much.
Yeah, no, so important. It's so important. And that's that contextualization too, that from that you keep mentioning, just knowing that, to your point, the what works for Department A is not necessarily the right approach or framework for Department B, but that takes time, right? To design, to understand, to design and implement and maintain and refine. So it's just, it's brilliant and so critical. But really, the infrastructure that you're talking about, to your point, is enabling operations. But you're also tackling the generational transfer challenge head on, right? Your legends and your beneficiaries. Your legacy project systematically captures knowledge from retiring industry legends. You describe it as building corporate memory and heritage. Walk us through, if you can, the methodology. How do you identify what knowledge to harvest, and what does the extraction process actually look like in practice? And given the fact that Department A may differ somewhat from Department B, the complexity, how do you drive coherence in that complexity?
Okay, I'll take the first part and the Wisdom will come in as someone who's working very closely there. Firstly, what we did is, I think we've already covered the engagement model. And secondly, was then based on the engagement model, then we unpacked the areas of concern or critical areas. And with Wisdom expertise in terms of risk analysis, that helped a lot. And the focal point at the moment is within our air traffic management services and also our technical services, because those are the vehicles, those are basically our core business. So the focus, and we're not saying someone coming from finance or accounting is not important. It's based on where we are losing and very difficult to replace. So that's where we focus. Secondly, we work very closely with the HR, as I've mentioned, or what we internally we call it HC, which is human capital. They are the ones who actually can help us to map, and it is within the policy. On an annual basis, they give us a list of those who will be retiring, because our focus is on retiring workforce. They tell us, and we identify them 5 years before. So we get a list, and then we can map and say, Diana will be retiring in the next 5 years. She is, because our retirement age at ATN is 60. So she's 55. In the next 5 years, she'll be gone. Immediately, we then contact Diana's line manager to say, are you aware? Because sometimes we're not aware as line managers that somebody's about to leave us until a month or two before they leave. So then we proactively go to the line manager to say, hey, based on our age systems, Diana will be leaving us in the next 5 years. How critical is it? There's a whole kind of analysis that we do through the line manager. They then can tell us, Diana has these critical areas that she's responsible for. And this is how they actually, and we actually then, as an organization, we already have our map, our knowledge map in terms of areas of concern, critical areas and so on, and competencies. So based on that, we map that and we measure to say, this is quite critical. And we've got a ranking that we can identify whether critical or not critical and so on. So based on that, then we sit with you, Diana, to say, Diana, we are away. You are going to be leaving us. And the reason why we say legends, we are trying to manage the perceptions. To say you are a legend. And remember, how you approach me makes me to say, yes, I can participate. But if I can say, you're about to retire and I need you, then yeah, you obviously push back. But if I'm calling you a legend and we are aware you'll be leaving us, obviously. However, we would like to actually help us to make sure that we go through the process. Then we explain the whole process to Diana. And for Diana, it will be easy then they open up. And then because already you've gave this person a pat on the shoulder in terms of she or he is a legend. And through the relationship between Diana and the line manager, then we are able to map the beneficiaries, those who have just entered the business and those who have been in the business perhaps because it's peer and also even that the lower levels. And out of that, then we identify the tools. We go back to our toolkit to say, given these areas the knowledge areas that we've identified, what are the key tools that we're going to use to capture this knowledge? And I'm going to leave it there. Then wisdom will take further. We'll take it further.
Yeah, extremely helpful and fascinating. And I'd love to just shift the perspective just ever so slightly. So heritage preservation is one dimension. And I'm really fascinated with the way you are also innovating how organizations acquire knowledge externally. So your Travel with Purpose initiative transforms business travel from a cost center to what you would refer to as a strategic knowledge gathering catalyst. This is a pretty provocative reframe. I love it. How does aligning travel with knowledge capture objectives create measurable organizational value?
This is one of our initiatives that we pride ourselves with, and we still yet to hear anyone doing something like this, and we'll definitely partner. And the reason why we pride ourselves with this is because, and this is how I normally, when I mentor someone or I talk to someone about knowledge management, to say, if you want to be important in the organization, this is how you start knowledge management. You identify what the pain points and you bring solution. And this is exactly what happened. We identified the pain point, and it was just out of a meeting where we realized that as an organization, we have a lot of travel. If I can tell you how much we budget for travel at ATNS and we are unable to account for it, we don't have tangible evidence of whether it does bring value to the business or not. That's how we then came up with TWIP, Travel with Purpose, to say, how do we then make sure that this issue that the business is struggling to account for and to actually to say it is worth it or not brings that kind of a value? So the whole process, that's how it started. I thought I should just give you that kind of a background. However, I mean, what is important is we looked at the different types of travel that we do as an organization. As I said, there's a lot of travel. We travel for business, we travel for conferences, for training, for attending to the international committees that we belong to. And all those things did not bring that kind of a tangible evidence and proof that they are beneficial for the organization. So then out of all, we're having a young person like Wisdom, he came up with he developed a system. He's a techie. I'm telling you one thing that I'm very proud of is to have a knowledge manager or specialist who is also a techie, who can sit and just sit behind the scene and design a system. So he designed a system based on this. And based on the system, all what we are saying is, let's collate information about our travel. And it's not us who's doing it. Like I said, Diana, our knowledge management tools, we don't do much. We monitor and we push where we need to push. So we're not doing much. We just designed and then we train people and we keep on reminding them. So he designed a workflow whereby, again, a proof that we work very closely with all our departments. We then work very closely with our process department, very closely with our travel department, very closely with our finance. Because remember, there's money here. There's travel that got a travel department that has to arrange traveling in terms of accommodation and so on. And also there are processes and workflow that needed to be designed. So through that whole collective, we then designed this system, which I'm going to leave it here for Wisdom to tell you the details of the system.
Huge. Yeah. Fantastic. Such a great best practice, right? Thank you for sharing that. And I know a lot of organizations, a lot of our listeners struggle with that as well, right? We have a lot of aerospace on the go professionals and understanding how to reflect the value of those activities is, I think, is a great suggestion for our listeners. So I know, man, that hour flew by so quickly. So maybe if we can, maybe close by drawing some of the key lessons learned that extend beyond air traffic management. And there have been so many. I know our listeners will be able to map so many of these lessons to their own experiences. But really, throughout this conversation, we've explored how knowledge management serves as critical infrastructure for safety, compliance, innovation and resilience, really managing in an informed way risk systemically. So as you look towards the next decade or next several decades with increased automation in international coordination challenges and expansion into new domains, what gives you the confidence that organizations can successfully safeguard their critical expertise while adapting to exponential change, which we're seeing virtually in every market, every domain? What gives you hope for the decades to come?
I'll leave that one to Wisdom. He's the young one. Just to add on what Wisdom is saying is the narrative that I'm now observing when it comes to knowledge management, which I think Wisdom touched part of, we've always seen knowledge as commodity, as an asset, The latest narrative that I'm picking up, especially from the young ones, it's seen as knowledge is now about heritage. And heritage from the point of saying, we will need this information, we'll need this knowledge in the future. And it actually builds the fundamentals and the foundation of where and how we should be visioning the future. And that itself, even from the very young ones, you see the interest of wanting to know in terms of how did you do it in the past? What do you think it needs to change before we can come with it? It was changing for the sake of changing. So those conversations gives me hope that it is not all lost. Instead, there's so much interest, as Wisdom said, that there's so much interest, and the interest is more about what happened. So that for me as a knowledge management professional gives me a lot of pressure of saying, I really need to start harvesting and harvesting the most critical knowledge, not harvesting for the sake of harvesting, but harvesting But I know that even someone who has not been had interest about knowledge management, but one day they will be having interest and they'll want to know about this. So for us, that's it. That, and that's the narrative that we see within A10S about we need information. And we know this thing was done in the past, but we don't have knowledge management. Please do something about it. We find ourselves, especially when it comes to the legacy program, believe it or not, Diana, we are engaging with the legends who have already retired, have already left A10S in 5 years ago to go and harvest some of the knowledge that they, and they are willing. That's a very interesting part, whereby when you give someone who has left the organization 7 years ago, when you say, can we come and have a capture? And we do it because as the older you become, the more you want to tell stories. So we use our storytelling tool in terms of the legends, because it becomes very easy for them to narrate. Unlike if you say you will bring somebody to mentor and so on. No. So we use the storytelling toolkit for us to harvest. And also we go to an extent of actually even recording them and make sure that we get those recordings available on our internal repositories.
Speaks volumes to the relationship and the trust that you've established, right? Your alumni community clearly cares and wants to give back, wants to continue to contribute and invest. Yeah. And you're helping those beneficiaries stand on the shoulders of the legends and reach further, right? For the organization, for the nation. So it's really brilliant work that you're doing. You've really converted an organization's operation into kind of a community, more of a community approach to, again, securing the airspace and protecting the citizens. So just brilliant, brilliant work. I'm so impressed with your system, your vision, your design, and the way you've built a community around this incredibly important mission. I know our listeners will be able to draw so many great lessons from your work, and will encourage our listeners, as always, to follow Dr. Mabasso, follow Wisdom, the great work that they're doing. We'll make sure that you have access to their social contact information, but please do keep in touch with the great work that they're leading. And as always, thank you, Dr. Mabasso. Wisdom, thank you so much. Grateful for your time, sharing your perspective, and joining our community.
And just with that, we'll have to wrap.
But again, for our listeners, thank you for joining us. Thank you for joining the series, Ecosystemic Futures, as well as the Shoshenworks Foresight Series with NASA Heritage. Follow and subscribe on your preferred platforms. And you can always visit shoshenworks.com for more. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you so much.